Hey, before we get rocking, let me tell you about eVoice. Love these guys. Holidays are here. What are you going to do for 2014? Might I suggest eVoice? Oh, yeah, there's going to be a little lull. That's right. It's the calm before the storm. The holidays. People are bloated. They got too much turkey and stuffing in them. But then, as the new year comes around, the business comes around. You want to grow your business this year? eVoice. It's simple technology that helps you make more money. Toll-free or local numbers, call routing tools, and professional dial-by-name directory. Make your business look like $1 million. It's easy with eVoice. And if you can't take a call, eVoice transcribes the voicemail and emails it to you. You no longer have to hear the nasally drone of whoever's on the other line. Try it before you buy it. 30 days free. That's right. Go to evoice.com/Adam or adamcarolla.com and click on the eVoice banner. Take charge of your business and prepare for a more efficient and productive 2014. Go to evoice.com/Adam or adamcarolla.com and click on the eVoice banner for a free 30-day trial. Hey, Chickpeas, Ace Man here. Before we get started, I want to thank you for sharing this product with a friend. Honestly, the only reason we're here and the lights are on and we've been going strong for over 4 years now is because of you and you telling a friend, a loved one, and or a coworker. So thank you so much in advance and enjoy the show.
This is Corolla Digital. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Corolla Show. Adam's guest tonight, David Landsberg, plus Allison Rosen on news, Walt Bryan on sound effects, and a review of the new Coen Brothers movie in Hooray for Baldywood. And now, runner-up for Time's Person of the Year, Adam Corolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Good day, Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Corolla.
Good day, Bald Brian.
I love fucking Hitler.
Sweet Daddy Coconut on Twitter wanted that one. Hashtag top drop.
Bald Brian has himself a little review. The Coen Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Inside Llewyn Davis.
I look forward. No Country for Old Men. One of the characters was named Llewyn.
No, I made the same mistake. I thought the movie was called Inside Llewyn Davis. One of the Josh Brolin character from No Country for Old Men was named Llewyn. So I assumed that it was sort of a connection, kind of tongue-in-cheek thing, but no, Llewyn.
Also, Doug Llewyn from People's Court
yes.
is an important
yeah,
reference.
Miss his ass. Also, but still...
Close enough that Coen I thought about it. We both thought
ask,
about it.
And you asked me... There's a handful of guys I count on at the box office. Coen Brothers, to me, probably brought me more pleasure in the last 20 years. It'd be him and them and Scorsese would have to take a run at each other. But then Spielberg to some degree. But
in terms of guys who rarely
Coen
miss.
Brothers, you know, for me, Fargo, No Country for Old Men. I love No Country for Old Men.
Those are two of my favorite movies of all time. They're
loved
great.
It. All right. So we'll get a review of that. I'm very curious about that. Also, things to complain about. I moved into a new home, and I wasn't one of these guys who got the cell phone early. I was the guy who waited.
You're kidding.
Yes. Mainly because I didn't want to be bothered. It was the same with email. I never answered an email until about 3 years ago, just because I didn't want to be bothered.
You've been catching up ever since?
I just, you know, I look at every...
Dear Michael Hutchins, I'm sorry this took so long to get back to you.
I do feel like there's an upside to everything. Everything is basically like a gun. There's, boy, don't you wish you had one when the shit was going down at the mall. And then there's now the wrong guy has one, or now your wife has one and she caught you cheating. I mean, it's just sort of a gun. It can do you good. It can do you wrong. I don't know if it's evil. It's like email is not inherently anything, but it can be the conduit to carry many hurtful feelings.
Yes.
Also, it can be a very convenient way to reply to Evites and things, you know, other things like that.
But I imagine for you, before cell phone and email, it wasn't like you noticed a lack in your life. You probably weren't like, God damn, if only I could fire off of something to someone right now.
I did not want to express my feelings that much to and that often to people. And I found that it's been a very easy way to express your feelings to people that you may not be comfortable with expression.
Exactly.
That expression in person. But either way. So I didn't get a cell phone. And, you know, I was late on board with the cell phone. But when I did get one, well, it never did work at my home. I lived up Beechwood Canyon. And once you get used to the spot where it drops, it's pretty much 4 foot one way and 4 foot the other way of a certain stop sign. And then there was a lot of, well, I'm going to pull over. If I'm on a conference call or I'm just...
This is my last good spot.
Knee deep into it and baby dolls waxing on or whatever's going on, I have to pull over. And the problem is there's not a whole lot of room to pull over up in the hills. The streets are tight and windy. Oftentimes I would pull over and then this human being, pardon me, this animal. You know when you pull over on a side street and the person that's driving behind you tucks in behind you and then acts like they can't get around you and you're like...
What? I hate that.
Are you dying to be the victim in this scenario? I do understand that there's a little room to be for negotiation here, but clearly I'm pulling over. Now, maybe I live at this house, or maybe I'm just delivering the Penny Saver in a very nice car. Maybe I deliver a lot of Penny Savers and I do it well.
Well, you obviously saved a lot of pennies.
That's right. Either way, don't slide in behind me. And I'm pulling in, and now I'm doing the hand wave. I've told you, because I pulled in this story, and it's one of those things where I didn't know what to do, but I slid in, and then all the other lemmings would slide in. Once the person behind you slides in, the person behind them has to slide in because they're hung out marginally more than you are, and so on. And it becomes this retarded snake that goes down the hill. So I've got into the habit of driving in a circle and never passing the stop sign where I dropped off, just on the street in front of my stop sign, turning to the right, going down, looping around, turning right again, coming back onto the same street again, turning right again. One particular evening after a very heated conversation with James Babydoll Dixon about, I don't know, the book publisher or whatever it was, 25-minute conversation, I was driving down the same street. I must have made 22 laps along, barely moving, but super slow. And there's this woman who was standing out on her porch that gave me a look like, what the fuck is going? Meaning she had been on her porch watching me do this slow circle around her neighborhood. She'd probably seen me on lap 15 and three laps in became intrigued, nine laps in started to get outraged, 11 laps in started to get worried for her child, but could not, who is this individual that hates gasoline so badly? And, you have to kind of put yourself in their position. Am I looking for an address? If I'm looking for an address, why have I gone down the same street 19 times? Like, two times, three times looking for an address. Do I live here? If I live here, why have I, what? She could not come up with any activity that I was doing other than wasting fuel and looking at her home.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you have severe OCD. And who is she to judge in that point?
Well, she judged because she gave me the what the F, which is hands out, mm-hmm. which is in a weird way, more than the F you, the are you insane? What is going on? Exacerbated. And there's no way as I was crawling past her house on with the one earbud in the other ear, I could do the, all I would do is point at my ear, but it looked like I was trying to kill myself or something. I was pointing at my ear, but I can't shape a cell phone tower out that quickly in Panama.
You know what it is? The giving the middle finger is you've offended me, but giving the what is the meaning of this, putting your arms in the Y formation, that's you've offended humanity.
Yes. Oh, the humanity. That's Willem Dafoe after he got shot
in Platoon.
That's the move. She fell to her knees. The music's
the helicopter's taken off.
Slow motion. slow motion, just on to her knees, hands up, Viet Cong coming up her ass.
Barnes takes all about him.
That was her move. That was her move. And I didn't know how to respond. So the first house was up Beechwood Canyon. The next house was about a mile and a half away. Exact same thing. People don't realize how quietly inconvenient it is to have to either stop or to say to the person whose number is in your cell phone, not in your home phone. So there's a move where you have to go home and then kind of look their number up on your cell phone and then just manually dial it. To say to the person, I have to get off the phone now. I will then call you back when I get inside of the house when I can't. We're going to break if I go past this point.
Rich man, poor man.
Well, that was the first. Now, these are the only two houses I've ever lived in since I've owned a cell phone. After that, it's all been moot. Ironically, all these shitty houses and apartments I've lived in the middle of the San Fernando Valley would have been just fine, yeah. But the cell phone had not been invented yet. All right. I now move, and I'm out of the hills, and I'm just on the flat land now, and the cell phone does not work, and I'm fucking exacerbated because I can't believe this is my third fucking house in the middle of Los Angeles where the cell phone doesn't work. But don't worry, there's something called the cell phone tower booster extender.
Oh.
Uh-huh. And Gary Haftard, brimming. Yes. Brimming with confidence, just like he was brimming with confidence about the sling box when I went and did Celebrity Apprentice. Remember how confident you were about that sling box?
Oh, I sure do.
What happened with the sling box?
Oh, it worked great. And then I walked out of your hotel room door, and I got on the elevator. And when I got off the elevator at the bottom, there was a voicemail from you screaming at me that it didn't work.
Right. But what was the first exchange we had about the sling box when we were here in Los Angeles?
Oh, it's going to work perfect. We'll plug it into the internet. Right. You'll have your whole TiVo. It'll be just like your living room is in your hotel room.
And what did I say?
No chance that works.
No chance. And what did you say?
It'll absolutely work. I've done it before.
Right. I said, but yeah, you don't understand. It's me. It's never going to work.
That's absolutely correct.
Right. So then when it didn't work, what did you say to me?
Might be the Wi-Fi, boss.
Mm-hmm. What are we going to do about that?
Not a strong connection. Well, they have a wired connection here. It's $22 a day, but... We get that wired connection. We plug that in. Probably have a stronger signal.
All right. And then I said, I'm going to get the production to pay for this. You got a bad internet in the middle of Manhattan? That's on you. I ain't paying that $22 a day. You come back Monday. We'll hook that sling box up. And once we hardwire it.
We'll be good to go.
All right. So then what happened?
I came back on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And we paid the $21. We hardwired it. We fired that baby up. You watched about 4 minutes of SportsCenter and ranted to me about the scroll at the bottom and how it ruins the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And then said, have a nice day, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out.
All right. And then what?
I got to the bottom of the elevator and received a voicemail from one Adam Carolla saying that it had stopped working.
That's right. You came back up, attempted to fix it?
Correct.
Could you fix it?
Nope. At a certain point, you just said, fuck it, get out of my room.
Right. Now... I knew it wasn't going to work,
that's
not
correct.
Because I know anything about technology. I just know me. There's correct. No way I'm going to be sitting in Trump Tower watching the shows I want to watch. And then when the phone rings, I go, oh, let me pause. Let me pause Top Gear UK and see who's on the telly. No, I knew that would never. Oh, I don't need to know anything about technology other than I just put myself into the Trump Tower after a long night of making sandwiches with Penn Jillette and said, there's no way there's going to be a long queue of shows that I'm wanting to watch. It's on my TV. No fucking way. And it didn't come close to it. And it was part of the reason, most of the reason why I'm glad I got off that show. Because the first thing out of my mouth is, I can't sit in a hotel room and not have control of the TV set for 6 weeks. That's fucking torture. And don't worry, the sling box is here, ladies and gentlemen. No. And it wasn't like, well, I'm going to Muncie, so I'm not sure if they... I'm going to Manhattan! And the fucking... It is the media capital of the planet, and I'm going there. It's like saying I'm going to Tokyo, but I don't know if I can get Wi-Fi.
They're probably wired.
No. Well, or whatever.
So, Gary, what do you think happened in that second time? Because the promise of the sling box is that that's where it should work and how it should work.
Yeah, the Trump doesn't have solid internet, and when I finally ran like an internet speed test, even after we had it wired, they're charging you $22 for garbage.
Oh.
All right. Well, the good news is I'm sure I paid for the $22. Now, we fast forward to...
Not the Donald Trump I know.
My third house.
Yeah.
Where I can't fucking have... And now, here's the thing that's comical. The cell phone works. There's always has to be a wildly inconvenient place in your house. Meaning, if you go into the entry closet, hang upside down, and are anally raped by a prisoner... It will work while he's in you, but he has to be dry. That'll work. But it's not going to work in your bedroom or your den. If I go stand in the very backyard, in the very furthest corner of the backyard, I can get my cell phone to work. Now, I can't get from the street to there. I can call the radio station that I'm doing the interview from there. But then, of course, on cue, the neighbor comes by with the leaf blower in the backyard. And then, what's going on over there?
Well, I'll be doing some yard work out there.
Yeah. And then they go, well, can you go into the house? And I go, no, I can't. I cannot move from this corner of the back of the fucking yard, the farthest back corner, far as you can get from my house. So I said, what the fuck? The fuck? I'm on the fucking third house, and I have to pull over, and I have to hang up. I know. So, Gary, you said what?
AT&T makes a cell booster. You just plug it right into your hardwired internet connection, and boom, 5 bars.
Cell booster. Bam. Sounds awesome. Does it not?
Boom.
All right. And you don't just buy this thing.
But furthermore, I said I have one in my house. It works perfectly.
Right. But you don't just hop on the Amazon over there. And by the way, if you're going to Amazon, doing a little Christmas shopping, go to AdamCarolla.com and click on through the Amazon banner there. But you don't just hop on Amazon and order it.
No, you got
They're like, we want some placenta from your second child.
Oh, yeah.
They need
it's a fight.
They need information. And it's not just, well, hey, Gary, tell Matt the Porcelain Punisher
like
to order me one.
They need to verify that you don't have enough cell.
They need to know it's
house.
Me who
right.
wants the thing, and you got to get on the phone with them. And
they want to look at the coverage maps, and then they need to know how many cell phones there are, and they need to know exactly where the house is located and where in the house the thing will be put. It is.
I know this is not the point of the story, but why?
Because they're dicks.
I could only imagine something with the FCC for some reason.
Some regulation about a certain number signals going out.
So it's one of these things where I make the proclamation 3 months ago, hey, let's get that thing. And then it turns sort of falls between the cracks a little. And then I go, where is that thing? Like, I thought you just going to order it. And no, you got to call in and they need this information. Nice. And what's your access code? And I don't have it. And call Lynette and email, blah, blah, blah. That goes around. And then when it comes time to hook, so that this is a 3 month odyssey. Then when we get it, it sits around at my house. And then I go, well, let's hook this thing up. Well, you don't just hook it up. You have to punch in the blah, blah, blah access, blah, blah, blah. But 2 weeks ago, Gary comes over, gets everything up and running, hooked up, and wired in. Yes?
Yeah.
Well, this afternoon, I was talking to Baby Doll when my phone fell off when I was coming up the driveway. And now, when I stand next to the cell phone booster, when I forget about being in the house, I stand in the closet. I literally open the closet door that it's in, and I stand next to it. Nothing. No fucking cell phone. So what the fuck? Why? What is it? I mean, what's a cell phone booster doing if you can't fucking lean on it and have your fucking cell phone work? All right.
Is there a troubleshooting guide?
I do, but I don't think he's asking a question.
What is it? Why? What?
You will get tweets in the morning that say that those units, if you follow the instructions, have to be within 3 feet of a window. Yours is in an enclosed closet with about $100,000 worth of other electronics interfering with it.
Oh. Well, feel free to pipe up when installing.
I tried when I talked to Ed, but Ed had already placed it in there because that's where the router is, and he didn't want any wires running into the office out of the closet.
All right, well, done and done. All right, well, let's go ahead and come up with a place that renders this thing feasible.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. In the meantime, what do I? Can I take it out and hang it out the closet door? Is it sitting in a rack? Is it sitting on top of something?
It's in the very back of that left-hand rack. It's nearly impossible to get to.
I'll just sit in your closet and I'll take your calls and then I'll yell them to you.
No, the point is I don't think anyone could take calls because the thing is it needs to be closer to a window.
Right. I had this problem with mine. It's like if it doesn't have a GPS connection after a certain number of days, it just stops working. And even when we get it by the window.
This is all very pertinent information.
Even when we get it by the window, you're probably going to drop calls when you're coming up the driveway because it's not good at switching from a regular cell connection to the booster.
All right. But anyway, wave of the future.
Yeah.
And the end of the end to all my problems.
Yeah, I didn't absolutely, see this, boss. Just give me a few days.
I didn't see the story ending like this. I thought you would have perfect cell phone
calls.
Right.
Do you have a landline?
Yeah, I do, which has a permanent hum, which is now driving me insane. As well, so
like a barbershop quartet hum, like
harmonized. I have 300.
That'd be nice.
Sweet Adeline. So now any radio station I call into, and I call into 10 a week, I have to just go get in my car and go drive down the street and park my car, and then do everything from in my car.
For
and
someone
then,
who does hate burning fuel and inefficiency, you must be loving this.
Well, the problem. Is I called in Dennis Miller's show today. There's no such thing as getting on your cell phone. You don't realize that little. Let me explain something in life. Let me explain. Let me tell you something, and then I'll tell you something else. But dig first. Dig on some Sherry's Berries, man. Oh yeah, delicious holiday food. But what about the Sherry's Berries, man? Love these babies. Giant dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries. Only $19.99. That's a 40% savings. Go to berries.com, click the microphone, type in ACE, enormous, fresh, juicy, mouth-watering berries, dipped in white milk chocolate, dark chocolate. Got a deal just for my listeners. That's you, by the way. $10 more, get double the berries. $10 more, double the berries. And you need a pallet jack to get these things in and out of the container. They are that delectable. The only way to get the $19.99 special is to give them a call, 866-FRUIT-02, or one other option, berries, berries.com. Visit berries.com, berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top of the right-hand corner there and type in ACE. Do not wait. Let's hop on this. So the part of life I've always said that was tough, the thing that was always a little tough about radio, doing radio for gigs, you don't realize, all you who have a gig, your job starts at 9 in the morning. Or whatever, you work the swing shift or the late shift. You have a shift. You have a time when you're supposed to show up. What you don't really realize is it doesn't start at 9. It can start at 9:03. It can start at 9:10. It can start at 9:30. Now, maybe the boss gets a little shitty if you keep rolling in at 9:30. But I will bet you most jobs that start at 9, the average person shows in about 9:04.
It definitely doesn't start at 9.
Not at 9, and then the door's locked and you can't get in the building
right
at 9. At 9 in 1 second, you're locked out of the building. The thing about radio is it starts like that. And
it's a hard in.
And you don't realize that it kind of takes its toll because when you're doing Loveline for 10 years and you're in your car and the show starts at 10 p.m. like that and it's 9:49, but you're only a mile or two away and you're doing okay, and then all of a sudden an 18-wheeler starts backing out of like a parking lot and everyone stops and a guy comes out and holds a sign out that says stop and they're waving. All of a sudden you're like, oh, shit. Now, if you have just a job, you don't think, oh, shit. You think, all right, I'll show up at 10:02. What's the big whoop? But all of a sudden, you have this thing. The cell phone and life in general is when I called in Dennis Miller this morning. My cell phone does not work in my house. I had to call in at 9:44 this morning. And I mean 9:44, which is to say when I was dialing at 9:45, Mike August was calling me while I was dialing them. And I knew what he wanted. He wanted to know where I was because they were calling because I was 57 seconds late to call them in. I would love to make that call from inside my house and gather my shit together and then walk out to the car while I was talking to Dennis Miller, but I can't. I must be in my car at that second or further down the road, but either way, not inside the house, and it drives me nuts. All right, Gary, Any other super pertinent information that drastically affects my life that you're playing incredibly close to the vest? Or is this it?
I'm sure there's other things.
Do I have prostate cancer? Has Lynette divorced me?
Spoiler
is there
alert.
Anything else?
Did Ray tell you about that foundation?
Is there anything
he actually
else?
Me 2 months ago. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Where the hell is we? We got, I got Kevin Costner. I did a nice interview with Kevin Costner. We got that. We got Baldywood. Let's do a little, by the way, us, San Diego, American Comedy Club. First show sold out. Second show, late show. Lena, I guess it's Esco, is going to be in. Beautiful and topless. Long story.
Boobs.
But that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
All right. So if you want to get tickets, they're going to go fast. All right, Bald Brian, what do we got, baby?
Hooray for Baldywood. He will tell you if a movie's good. Brian will review the flicks that he's seen upon the big screen or in his Netflix queue. Before you spend bucks, remember his taste sucks. He loved that train wreck piece of shit, Transformers 2. Hooray for Baldywood.
Let me give it a little love to E-Voice before you jump in here, Bald Brian. Some of the execs are sitting back there. I just had a fun time with those guys, and may I impress this upon you? The holidays are here. A little calm before the storm, but 2014, you want to do something to help your business? E-Voice, baby. Simple technology that helps you make more money. Toll-free or local numbers, call routing tools, professional dial-by-name directory. Of course, none of this applies to me because my cell phone doesn't work in my house.
But if it did...
Oh, make your business look like $1 million. Can't take a call? E-Voice transcribes the voicemail and emails it to you. By the way, I was just talking to the E-Voice execs back there, and they said that's the one my listeners love the most. Mm-hmm. Try it before you buy it. 30 days. 30-day free trial. 1 month free. Go to evoice.com/Adam or adamcarolla.com and click on the E-Voice banner. Baby, peoples, you cannot go wrong. 30-day free trial. Take charge of your business. Prepare for more efficient, productive 2014. Go to evoice.com/Adam or adamcarolla.com and click on the E-Voice banner for your free 30-day trial. All right, Brian.
Yeah.
Coen Brothers.
I've been using E-Voice for almost 2 years now. I love it. But yes, Coen Brothers movie, Inside Llewyn Davis, is in theaters now. It's only in about 4 theaters. It's going bigger release next week. So I'll give us a second movie if people want to check it out. But for now, Inside Llewyn Davis, directed by Joel and Ethan Coen, written by them too. The guys behind talked about Fargo, No Country for Old Men, True Grit, which you love so much.
Mm-hmm.
Great lineage of films. You probably know the Coen brothers. Starring Oscar Isaac, Carey Mulligan, both of which were in Drive, coincidentally, Justin Timberlake, and John Goodman, which is good because there was almost a movie that didn't have John Goodman or Rob Corddry. It was close.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. We dodged a bullet on that one. Sometimes a movie is great, but you still have a hard time recommending it to everyone. This is one of those cases. 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. Really good movie, and I really liked it a lot. If I asked you to describe, if you saw this and I asked you to describe the plot, you would have a very hard time describing the plot. There really is none. There's no story. There's no plot. Joel Coen himself kind of laughed about it, you know, in an interview. He was like, "Yeah, you know, we were concerned us at one point," he said, and that's why I threw the cat in there. And there's a through line about a cat that's sort of the de facto subplot.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a character study, and this is all about Llewyn Davis.
Mm-hmm.
He's a folk singer in 1961 in New York, and the story is very funny. It's a comedy. It's very, I wouldn't call it a dark comedy, but it's a Coen Brothers comedy where it's not, you know, overt and there's not knocks on the head and stuff. This is they satirize the whole folk scene, you know, the pre-Bob Dylan, the whole folk scene, Peter, Paul, and Mary type, very self-serious, you know, granola types. Funny movie. And there have been some great character studies. There Will Be Blood was a great one, Five Easy Pieces. I mean, there can be great movies that have essentially no plot. But if you're going in looking for a great plot, this doesn't have it. This is all about the character. Good movie. I liked it a lot. Just not.
Well,
frustratingly without a story, though.
If you're going in expecting, Coen Brothers has some great comedies. Raising Arizona.
No Country for Old Men is lots of great characters and a great plot, in my mind.
Yes, absolutely. Great plot. Great story.
But, I mean, the characters, Tommy Lee Jones, it's just so great.
Yes.
And Javier Bardem and all that. I mean, just loved it all.
Even the Woody Harrelson character is great.
All of them.
And, yeah, Josh Brolin. It was a great book by Cormac McCarthy. And this is more Barton Fink than the Hudsucker Proxy, to use two other Coen Brothers movies. It's more like that. It's more Barton Fink, more A Serious Man, which was their movie from 3 years ago. If you like those, this is your kind of movie, and you're going to love it. Oscar Isaac, tremendous. I would not be surprised at all to see him get a Best Actor nomination for the Oscars.
As the lead.
However, this is not for everyone. Like I said, it's only in 4 theaters, so I want to recommend the movie. I got a lot of people tweeting and emailing saying, how about a streaming movie or a movie we can rent because I have kids, I don't get out to the movies that much, or it's not convenient for me. So here's one you can actually check out right now. It's a little documentary. It's very funny. It's called Mortified Nation. And you can get it on iTunes, you can get it on Amazon, click through and get it. Full disclosure, this is produced by a friend of mine, and that's how I saw it. But it's fantastic. It's about, so are you familiar with the stage show Mortified? Have you heard about this?
No.
It's a stage show, and the documentary is about it, where people get up on stage, adults, and they read from their childhood diaries or their childhood poems or rap lyrics or something embarrassing, humiliating from their childhood.
Uh-huh.
And this is the movie about that. It's a series of people going up on stage and reading very embarrassing things with pictures and interviews and stuff. And it's a very, very funny movie. I really enjoyed it a lot. You can stream it or rent it, I should say.
You know what's weird? I'm just sort of realizing everything. Everybody wants to be a stand-up comedian, sort of like everyone wants to either be a rock star or a stand-up comedian. I'm having a heavy thought here.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, here we go.
I'm ready to dig.
Thanks for prepping us.
Dig, please. Well, we all played the air tennis racket and the air drums and blah, blah, blah. And everybody sort of wants to be a rock star. That's the fantasy. I think there's three fantasies. Well, let's make it 4. All right, dig. Everyone wants to be a model, like a supermodel. Like, wants to walk in a room. And
I just want to look like one.
Right, well, go to Barbizon.
You want to be told you should be a model.
Would you like to be a model or just look like one? I like to smell like one. So we all, but that dream gets crushed pretty early.
Yeah.
Your hair starts falling out around the 7th grade.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 6.5 grade for me.
Whatever it is, we all realize certainly by junior high that we're not going to Milan.
It would be a long shot.
To do the modeling. Okay, so you're not going to be a model. Then there's the professional athlete, especially for boys. And that gets crushed at some point as you're being crushed on the junior varsity football team. That gets crushed. Then there's rock star.
You're describing my childhood, by the way.
There's rock star. Everyone wants to be a rock star. We fantasize about being a rock star, but that involves hours of trying to master an instrument, and even if you do, it doesn't guarantee anything or come close to anything. I never wanted to take the time to really learn how to master the guitar, but I did want to hear the roar of the crowd. So everyone wants to be a rock star, but who really has the pipes, God-given pipes, and then or who can
the dedication
play
yeah.
like Al Di Meola. So there, because I know there's a lot of kids listening to the show, and you look up to Al. So now what are we kind of left with the last fantasy? And that's
ballerina.
That's
princess.
That gets beat out of you as well. Stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone sort of has that fantasy of holding the mic and the room being spellbound and doubled over with laughter and nods of agreement and so on and so forth. But that's a pretty scary proposition, and that requires a lot of work as well.
Yeah.
That is, you're going to do yourself a 1-hour HBO special. That's going to take 5 years of you touring the country and playing late nights and, you know, walking into.
It's going to take years before you get to the point where you can start doing good material on TV.
Absolutely. But now, and this is why every time there's a best man speech, the jokes start coming. It's a roast. This is even the eulogies. Sometimes the comedy pops in. The weddings, even the priest, when you give him, certainly the rabbi, fucking wrestle the mic away from those guys. You give them the mic, and they just have it, and they're telling jokes.
Like, I'm an accountant, but everyone tells me I'm funny.
Right. Okay. So this is everyone's natural fantasy tendency to sort of make this audience laugh. But not everyone wants to do what Chris Rock and Sarah Silverman do. Not everyone can. And then that's a lot of, that's a many hours, many open mics, a lot of waiting in line, and a lot of crickets. And that doesn't mean it's ever going to happen. Thus, there's a whole bunch of little cottage industries that have popped up that...
live podcasts.
That's right. When you sit up on stage... No, but you listen to KCRW on the weekends, and you listen to what's their show on the weekends?
All things considered? I have no idea, actually. I'm just throwing something out there.
No, the show that's exactly what I'm describing, or pretty close to describing exactly what
Wait, don't tell me?
No, the show that describes what I'm describing.
I've never listened to it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm helpful on this.
Well, when you hear it, you'll go, oh, yeah, that's the name of the show. Okay. What is it? It's not stand-up. People get up and tell their stories.
Oh, Moth.
The Moth. Is that KCRW? I'm making that up.
I think NPR has it. NPR. KCR also.
Oh, out here. Yeah, it's the Moth. Yeah, it's a way
storytelling.
For...
storytelling.
But it's all... 92% of it leans hard on the comedy.
Yeah.
And everything... spoken word starts turning into stand. It all turns into leave a guy on stage. I don't care if it's a corporate event. You just start. I don't care if the guy's a financial advisor. Mm-hmm. It starts leaning toward the preachers. It starts going toward the comedy. So we have all we have everyone with this burning desire, this unyielding desire to get up and do what Richard Pryor did. Back in the day, when you watch these guys storm the stage and Eddie Murphy and George Carr and all your heroes and all that kind of stuff, but not really the ability to do that. So we've created all these various outlets where somebody, basically a civilian, could go up there and do the Moth story, do the story of when you're in the sixth grade and your mom took you to the dentist and you wet your pants when you're under sedation. And the audience is laughing and hysterical. And you don't have to really be a stand-up to experience. If there was some rock and roll version of that, we'd all be doing that as well. We just can't play
karaoke.
An instrument. Yeah, karaoke is sort of, there's a reason why it's popular. This is kind of that.
It is kind of that.
Where everybody's going... I may not be a stand-up, but I do know this story, and I can get up there and tell it for 8 minutes and make the audience laugh and experience that feeling of what Richard Pryor experienced.
You do get some of that in this documentary. You see the selection process, the audition process. People bring in their tattered notebooks from middle school and stuff, and they're reading through their diaries or whatever. And then you see the people backstage before they actually go on. They're nervous. They're psyching themselves up like it's a big game. Good movie, Mortified Nation, and of course Inside Llewyn Davis. Would not be surprised if this is up for a couple Oscars. Both good movies. Check them out now.
All righty.
Hooray for Bollywood!
I had a little conversation with Kevin Costner. We'll get into that right after this. Oh man, between the holidays, the bad weather, the sick days, achoo! That's right, I got a cold coming on. Getting everyone in the same room, it's impossible. You can't do it. Don't even try. Forget it. Use GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting brought to you by Citrix. You can share screens to work together on documents, spreadsheets, and projects in real time without getting all germy. Use your webcams. Make your meeting an HD video conference. Start hosting a meeting in seconds from your Mac, PC, smartphone, or tablet. All you got to do is sign up for free. That's right, free. A free 30-day trial. See how I go up octaves? 30 days. Free. No credit card required. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button. Use the promo code Adam. That's GoToMeeting.com. Promo code Adam. Very excited to welcome to the show the great Kevin Costner. Kevin, you there?
Yeah, I hear you.
Sorry.
We get off to a bad start here, buddy.
I didn't... I had to push a button.
Yeah, I know.
I screwed it up.
That's what all those assistants are for, right?
Oh, thank God I don't fly airplanes. Kevin, I'm a big fan, and I'm excited to be, working with you to some degree coming up this Sunday. That's December 15th. I'm going to be hosting. Kevin's going to be playing music, by the way, with his band Modern West, and it's at the Air Force One Pavilion at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, which I've never been to. I'm excited to see Air Force One. I'm excited to hear your band play.
Well, thanks. I haven't been there either. You know, I like to see what that's all about. It's not too far from home, which has been a kind of a first for me. Usually I'm playing around the world somewhere with the band, but just kind of right down the road. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you pull this off too, because hosting is just not an easy job. I don't care what anybody thinks. You know, it's just not easy.
Well, it's sort of like it's the reason why I never wanted to be a mover, because you could move in a 20,000 square foot mansion and put everything in place, and if you dinged one end table, the chick who worked there, who owned the house, would say it was a disaster, because nobody ever compliments a mover. No one ever goes, "Oh, who put that sofa there?
Yeah,
that's perfect." And the thing about emceeing, if you do a great job, it seems like the easiest gig in the world. And nobody really knows, but if you screw it up, it's easy to screw up, and it's apparent.
It's hard. It's not easy. I mean, everybody thinks they can do it. Yeah, well, try once.
Well, Kevin, that brings us back to you, actor, writer, director. But have you ever tried your hand at stand-up and that kind of thing, that master of ceremonies?
I had to do it once. They asked me to do it back in Nashville, and it was the I hated it. My pits were sweating. My temples were going. I feel like I can answer, live questions in front of a billion people. But the discipline of actually hosting, of saying, of introducing, it just reminded me of getting up in front of the chalkboard when I was a kid. I mean, I just couldn't think. I would rather say something vulgar really quick and have the teacher go, "Jesus, you got to go to the principal's office." And I go, "Good, that's exactly where I want to be, other than being in front of this chalkboard."
Well, it's speaking of being in front of the chalkboard, I used to say that me and Dr. Drew were the only two people in Hollywood that are from this area, from Los Angeles especially. And then knowing I was going to interview you, I was reading up. I didn't know you were from Linwood, California, which is not far from where I am right now, and grew up out here in Southern California, went to school out here.
Yeah, I was born in Linwood. I lived in Compton, so that's where my first home was, and then I'm a Southern California guy, and ended up moving around a lot. Yeah, I went to four different high schools, so I just was always, kind of on the move. But yeah, I started in Compton, California.
And I was also reading that you had to move around a lot because your dad was, I guess he worked as a lineman?
Yeah, he worked for the Edison Company. So we were, one job. He, came from Oklahoma out of the Dust Bowl, and just very conservative background. And just, he got a job, and he wasn't going to let go of it.
And the moving around was because he moved around, not because you would stand at the chalkboard and yell out expletives.
I wasn't a problematic child. I just didn't get half of what was trying to happen in the classroom.
Well, do you look back? I mean, I have these moments in my own life where I look back at me standing behind a grill at the McDonald's in Studio City or digging ditches on a construction site and think to myself, "Oh, how was that ever going to work?" I mean, the way my brain is wired, how was I going to sit alone with a pile of dirt for 9 hours with no earbuds and nobody to talk to and nothing to write down and just sit there and shovel all day? Now you know how you're wired, right? Back then, you didn't know how you were wired. You just knew you weren't working in the environment you were supposed to be working in.
It's true. I some of those jobs you outlined, though, I did. I framed houses. I drove trucks. I worked commercial fishing boats. It's how I made my money. So I knew how to work because of the background I came from. My dad, is a kind of hard-scrabbled guy. And so, you had to be kind of useful. So the idea of kind of singing, kind of writing poetry, making movies, it was not something you kind of whispered in the house. "Hey, Dad, I think I'm going to do this." And, pretty soon he'd stop eating and look over and go, "Well, how are you going to do that?" And once the question starts about how are you going to do this, I didn't have an answer to how I was going to, you know, make my life, how it was going to unfold. And I think probably a lot of people go through that. The minute you decide what you really want to do, the rest of the world panics, at least the people that love you and are around you go, what, you know, and in truth, if I look at my life and have to look backwards, I don't even know how I would piece it. I you know, that what's happened to me has been, I feel really lucky. You know, I felt luckiest about knowing what I wanted to do when I finally figured it out, which meant I had to kind of shut off the noise of what everybody else expected me to do, wanted me to do, and say, wait a second, this is what I'm going to do. Because, like I said, I always knew how to work, because that was the first thing that you had to have in my household. So, you know, out on the ocean, you know, for 8-9 days, pulling up fish and, you know, and using that money to get yourself through college. I know how to do that, but it's not what I wanted to end up doing.
Right. So, two questions then. I used to, when I worked construction for many years and just did earthquake rehab work in downtown L.A. and just did a lot of really dirty, crappy construction, manual labor jobs, I would always sort of look around and go, is everyone as miserable as I am? Because I'm miserable. And no one seemed to be as miserable as I was. And I realized that's because they weren't wired like I was. If they were as miserable as I was, they would kill themselves. I couldn't figure out why, because at the time I wasn't sure what I was supposed to be doing with my life. Now I kind of understand it. Did you feel that way when you were out on that tuna boat for 9 days at a time where everyone else seemed to be content?
You know, I wondered. I did. I mean, like, you know, I'm sure for you, you know, as miserable as you were, you also knew where the jokes were. I mean, you'd look around and you'd go, really?
Right.
We're going to do this? Really? And so, you know, I'm sure that there's guys that worked with you said, you know, this cat's a little different. You know, they look at you and see where you ended up. The truth is, whenever you're considered successful, most of the people just kind of look at where you're at, like where you're at right now, and then you're going to go to the Reagan Library, and you're going to do this, and you're on television, and your friends kind of spot the map, you know, from a celebrity point of view on a certain level. And they look at you, and they go, man, I want to be you, but no one ever wants to take somebody's life and put it in reverse and see themselves, you know, looking at, you know, the crack after the Northridge earthquake, and you're one of those guys trying to fill it in, and go, how did he get there? You know, kind of retracing your steps is almost would make you not even think you could do the work you ended up doing.
The Northridge earthquake for me was one of the greatest things that ever happened, because I was living in a rented house with three guys in La Crescenta, California, and everybody who I knew who had a house had a cinder block fence that fell over. That was the first thing that happened. Every house in the San Fernando Valley had a cinder block wall that fell over. So I had literally thousands of feet of fence to put back up.
Right.
And it wasn't going to be cinder block. It was going to be redwood dog-eared 1x6. And I'd be the guy at the Home Depot with the stack of those things, 100 feet high. I mean, literally, I'd put 125 of those things on one of those push carts. You couldn't even see me. I was down low like an offensive lineman. I was in the scrum, and I'd just be pushing this thing along, and I'd already picked through 200 of them because some of them were propellered and warped and cracked. And I just spent the next 6 months putting up fencing, making money, thinking, I hope we have an earthquake every year so I can stay in clover.
I got a feeling you wake up in the middle of the night sometimes, just have nightmares that you're back there. You need some therapy on this thing. Listen, you're past it, okay?
I can't.
You made it, man. You don't. Yeah.
I know, but Kev, I don't ever think I'm going back to that, but I do love the base. I do love the fact that I know what it's like to have a miserable job.
I tell you, that's America, though. I mean, you know, America at its worst, we know what that is. But America at its best, we know that, you know, you can be standing with a group of people and you say, you know what, I ain't going to be here long. I got something else on my mind. I got something else that's going to happen to me. And honestly, a lot of countries don't have that.
Right.
We have it.
No, I do. I try to scream that from the mountaintops all the time, and it drives me nuts when people get up at conventions, especially Democratic conventions, and explain to the people in the audience that it's not a level playing field, that we'd like to think that we live in an America where you can do what you want, but you can't do what you want because these people are holding down those people and you're being kept from succeeding. I hate that
message.
Yeah,
that's a bad. That's kind of an unfair thing to say. It's not true, and it's not part of the DNA of why people cross the ocean, man.
And it may be mathematically true, in that it's not possible to create a completely level playing field because some people, like yourself, Kevin Costner, you were born attractive. You automatically, just take the compliment, you're easy on the eyes, you have a step up on less attractive people. That's just how you're born. What are you supposed to do? How are we going to level that playing field? Take a soldering iron to your face? Women especially, there's attractive women. They have an advantage over less attractive women. People are born into certain communities and certain families. Yes, that's true. Now, what are you going to do about it? If you want to sit around and complain about the field not being level, you'll never get off that tuna boat.
Yeah, it's listen, I feel like, yeah, I was, you know, I'm 6 feet, you know, I'm white. There's some advantages because you just have to be really honest about that. I get it. I get it completely. I mean, I just did a movie called Black and White, you know, I produced it, and it really deals with a lot of things, a lot of interesting issues. I hope you check it out when it does come out. I kind of financed it myself, and it deals with this kind of people, the haves and have nots on certain levels, and it is possible here. It just is, and if you don't recognize your good luck, listen. I wasn't born on third base, though. Okay, I didn't come from a family in Hollywood. I didn't know a single person when I would come in from Orange County. I didn't even know what to do wanting to be an actor. I used to actually come in my truck. I would sleep right next to ships, what used to be on La Brea and Sunset. I would sleep in my camper.
Yeah, the diner.
The diner. I would go there, and there was a phone booth because I didn't really know what to do. I just knew that a man goes into work every day. I didn't have work, so I drove into Hollywood, and I got the drama log, and I would look at it. But I would literally kind of curl up in a fetal position. Now, keep in mind, I had a degree from the university, and here I was, you know, I was just driving in, and I didn't even know who to call. So, you know, so some people are born on third base. Some people have breaks, you know, coming out of the womb on certain levels, and I acknowledge all of them. But I had to figure this out, and I was humiliated more than once. I was said no to 1,000 times, and you know, I worked there at Raleigh Studios. I got a big fat paycheck based on $3.50 an hour right out of university. It wasn't like I was really climbing the ladder.
I think it's really easy, and I've had it happen, and you may have had it happen on a micro and a macro level, where people are just dismissive. They go, oh, come on, you knew this guy, or you had this, but, you know, for me, they say, oh, well, you met Jimmy Kimmel, and if you hadn't met Jimmy Kimmel, then he wouldn't have gotten you. I didn't meet Jimmy Kimmel. I went to the radio station and camped out until somebody let me in.
Yeah, no, the people don't, that's what I said earlier, people don't want to put your life in reverse, and, you know, that noise is just a level of jealousy, it's a level of ignorance, and it's uninformed, and you know, it's too bad, and it's like, next. You talk to somebody else that can make you feel good.
Not only that, but what I want to say to them is, if that's your narrative, if that's what you believe, that's fine. I don't believe it. I happen to know the truth. You're never going to affect me, but I worry about what you're doing to yourself and your kids, because this is not the path to success for you. Don't worry about me. I'm successful. You can try to erode it all you want. I'm worried about you.
Yeah, well, even that's being pretty generous, man.
That's my nature, baby.
I think that's pretty friendly, actually.
Well, speaking of friendly, I'm going to be doing the MC gig. Now that I'm intimidated, maybe I'll back out. It's coming up December 15th, that is this Sunday, Air Force One Pavilion at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley. I'm going to be there. Kevin Costner playing. And again, I know what it's like. You're out on the road so much that if there's a place that's within striking distance in your automobile, it's like, wow, I'm not going to the airport. This is awesome. Modern West, his band. And for tickets and more information, you go to www.loveofourcountry.com. You come out, you see me. Kevin, I'm guessing you'll make yourself accessible. You'll say hi, press the flesh with a few fans and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, the band thing was something I really enjoyed doing. I've been able, you know, I just started this band about 9 years ago, and wanted to play wherever I was making a movie, just where I was making a movie in the community, and that really started to evolve. I just wanted to do our own music, and it's kind of evolved to the point where we've played around the world now, and you know, the chance to, you know, the best that it was started without a plan. There was no idea that we would do anything other than play where I was making a movie. And
right.
I think sometimes the best things come out of not having this massive plan. It was just to play. And, you know,
if you were going to be in Louisiana for 3 months shooting a film,
right,
you would say, let's find some honky tonk in Louisiana and we'll have something to do on the weekends.
And we did that. I mean, this very last movie I mentioned to you, Black and White, I played the House of Blues. I went to Baton Rouge and played there, went up and played another city I can't even pronounce, and it was interesting to do that. You know, our music's very Americana, and it's just a kind of a different way to get to know, I think, anybody that comes Sunday night. You know, we'll have it'll be fun. They're going to get to see you. I'm going to play really loud, and I'm going to play original music, and people will get to see a different side of both of us, probably.
Well, I look forward to seeing you in person, like I said, this Sunday. I look forward to seeing Air Force One in person as well.
Yeah, we'll get on the thing. We'll have some peanuts. We'll walk them down.
Hey, we may fire it up and strafe the tower. Modern West, name of the band, Kevin Costner, name of the celebrity. And again, me, Kevin Costner, this Sunday. Come on out. Say hi. It's for a great cause. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
Perfect. Well, I'll see you Sunday.
I look forward to it, my friend.
Okay.
David Landsberg is here. His movie, Sex Tax. We're going to get into this. Very interesting stuff. Very quickly, though, DraftKings.com, baby. Paul Bryan, titillated over there. Millionaire Grand Final, just days away. You could win $1 million. I got a tip for you this weekend. Cleveland versus Chicago. 9 out of the 10 winners of the 200 grand event all had at least one Cleveland player on their team and won over 80 grand. One day fantasy sports, not the old drawn out long season. Oh, it never ends. You guys are all mathematically eliminated by now, but not with DraftKings. You live to fight another day, Brian.
This is why DraftKings is invented for this time of year. My traditional fantasy team got bounced from the playoffs last week. The snow game did me in, but now DraftKings is my fantasy league for the next however many weeks.
DraftKings.com. Dawson?
Hurry for free entry into the Millionaire Grand Final. Enter promo code Adam at DraftKings.com for your free shot to be crowned a fantasy football millionaire. But you got to enter Adam today at DraftKings.com. For details and your free entry, visit DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com.
So, David, who
yes.
Many years ago, writer, executive producer on The Cosby Show and Love Boat. Love Boat. I miss that Love Boat. I miss hearing Ernie Anderson's voice going, on the Love Boat.
I miss the money.
Yeah.
I miss the money.
Yeah.
It was, but they put me on. I was actually an actor on the first Love Boat.
First episode.
Joanna Kearns fell in love with me. Mm-hmm. As an actor.
Sure.
And the
then yeah, Grown Pants.
And
mom.
Somebody else fell in love with me on the second one. And then when they brought it back, remember with Robert Urich on UPN?
Yeah.
They decided that I should be the executive producer and head writer.
That's when they had the mermaids. Have the mermaids on that one? Like the hot chicks? Somebody decided, look, we need 8 or 10 hot chicks floating around here constantly.
Actually, they did, but they didn't hire them. I was brought in.
Wait a minute. I thought the mermaids were on that one with Ted McGinley.
Ted McGinley was on the first.
Ted was on the first?
Yeah.
But he wasn't on the second as well? And there's a law that says Ted McGinley must be in every TV show, whether it's the first run or the second run. Now we got to find out. We got to find out where the mermaids were.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about Sex Tax.
Okay.
Tell me about this movie.
Well, a long time ago, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, the government took over the Mustang Ranch.
The government did.
The government did. It was a tax lien, and a couple of gangsters were involved. And the government suddenly found this brothel on their books. Now, they have a fiduciary responsibility to either make money with that business or get rid of it.
The government.
The government. Now, the real story is they sent somebody out there and they said, get rid of everything. Sell it. Sell the sign. Sell whatever isn't nailed down. Then sell whatever is nailed down. Then sell the nails. Get rid of this brothel. And the myth is that someone went and actually ran it. But it's not true. So I wrote the movie about the guy who actually goes, and he's a straight guy. He's an auditor.
Well, yeah, a gay guy wouldn't work in that environment.
Well, I mean, straight shooter.
I understand where the semen comes from, but I'm saying
I lean a little left to right.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah, if you have the Peyronie's disease, it'll fly around and hit you in the ass.
It's true. I don't even know if that's true.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
It's
well,
it's documented.
It's like a boomerang.
You gotta watch YouTube. You turn on a ceiling fan, guy's got Peyronie's disease, right in the ass. Sorry, go ahead.
So they
good luck
send
explaining
this,
that to the old
they
lady.
They send this Eagle Scout out to, and he actually tries to run it.
And does he have any success?
He has a little success, but more it's the guy against the government. It's the little guy. It's the guy they blamed at the IRS when they said they're targeting groups.
Right.
And someone said, I think it's a guy named Merle in Cleveland.
Right, right.
Well, blame it on one guy.
There's always, speaking of iconic 70s TV shows, the Fall Guy. It's always the guy who... I don't know. I guess war's this way, too, right? The
yes,
kind of guys that least deserve it, the ones that their guts are splattered all over the field. And everyone else is in a bunker drinking sherry. I mean,
I was actually in a war.
Which war?
Vietnam.
Really?
Yeah, I was drafted.
And what happened?
Well, I'm here.
Right.
Which is
good. That
part
turned out.
Which is good. But you know where you talk in your book, by the way? I read your book.
Oh, thank you.
Books.
Oh, you read my books. Oh, by the way, mermaids.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Appear to have been added in the 10th season, 1985, 1986. Terry Hatcher was one of the mermaids, by the way. That's how she got her start. So my memory was, oh, Love Boat was over by the time the mermaid showed up. They showed up just literally in the 10th season.
I showed up around 1998.
For the second one when
second
Bob
one.
Yerk
Rob,
was
right,
ca-
Bob
skipping
Yerk,
the
what
ship.
A dear,
right.
What a great
Love
guy.
That guy.
What a dumb.
Miss him.
Me too.
He was a really sweet, nice man.
He did a play with me. I said, I'm going to do a play over at the Falcon Theater in Toluca Lake.
Small theater.
I said, yes. He says, well, send me the script. I'm sending him the script. And in between, he called up and said, ah, fuck it, I'll do it.
Don't take this in the spirit in which it's intended, David.
Uh-oh.
Bob will be missed, but... You shouldn't stand next to Bob Yurek that long.
That's what made it funny.
He's a strapping,
strapping,
big
deep voice.
6'4 man, virile.
Reeking of testosterone.
Yeah, it's dripping off him.
And
I know.
We're backstage, we're ready to go on, and he's shaking. And I looked at him and said, you okay? He says, well, I'm a little worried about that first scene. I said, oh, my God, you're not Dan Tana.
That's right.
You're just a... fucking scared actor. That's all you are.
He's the first, a wonderful eulogy, by the way. I was at his funeral. I remember that verbatim. You're not Dan Tana. You're a fucking scared actor. I remember that. Speaking to his daughter.
It was
very moving. It was very moving.
Wonderful. Joanna Kearns was in that, too. And it was great. It was great.
We spent a lot of time with Joanna Kearns. I remember Bob Yurek had a car that had a telephone in it. Which my mind was blown.
Wow.
I could not imagine that
and
somebody...
And now you have that.
Now I have a phone that has a car attached. Oh, no, wait.
No, you got it.
I can go wherever I want except for my own home.
Absolutely.
With my phone. Let's get back to my books.
Sure.
You read both of them?
Both of them.
While waiting to come on the show?
No, I took time. I took time.
Oh, I love
and
that.
You know what makes me... I'm a little upset because I didn't see The Hammer.
Oh, well, we'll have to correct that.
And I wanted to see The Hammer.
We'll have to
It was good to find out all about you. Again, because I see you on O'Reilly and things, and I listen to the podcasts. And from adversity and challenge, sink or swim.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I did in my life because I'm tiny. I'm only about 2 feet tall.
Yeah, but you got chutzpah, man.
I had to.
Yeah.
I had no, or I would turn out to be that diminutive little prick who was outside the 7-Eleven where you were throwing water balloons.
Yeah, we hit the hit a guy in a Honda, and he had a little Napoleon complex, and he got out of the car, and he busted us. Well, I was about 13, just chucking water balloons.
Called your father.
Night. But you want to just talk about the kind of stuff that you can't write, which is once he busted us for throwing water balloons at his car, he said to me and my buddy James, you either call your parents and you get them here at midnight. I was supposed to be sleeping at James's house, but instead we, you know, snuck
of
out
course.
To chuck water balloons at cars. But he said, you either, can I ask you this? Who are these people that have all the time in the world all the time? Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
It's Saturday night. It's midnight. The guy's driving home from something. Maybe he's going somewhere. Do you really have time to wait for the popo on a Saturday? Like, everything I do is loosely based on you're fucking lucky I'm in a hurry. Otherwise, I would stop and give you a piece of my fucking mind, but I'm too busy.
So what? Either you call your parents or he was going to call the cops?
This guy said, look, you got two choices. You call your parents. You get them over here. I'm going to wait for them to show up, and I'm going to explain to them, you know, what they should do to you.
What a dick you are.
Or we call the cops. So you have it your way. So, of course, it was like, well, I guess we got to call our parents.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, so I went first, and I called my dad, who's living in his $15,000 house in North Hollywood. And, you know, my dad goes to bed when the street lights come on. So it was midnight. So he'd been, you know, at least 4 hours in the sack. And he picked up the phone.
Yeah, hello?
And I was like, Dad, I'm at a 7-Eleven, and I threw a water balloon, and the guy's really pissed off.
Oh,
and
great.
Just get in your bathrobe and come. I don't think he owned a bathrobe. He's a little rich for the Corolla blood. But put your fucking hoodie on and come down here and come get me. And that he did. James called his house, but his Spicoli-esque 17-year-old brother did the move where he went like, ugh. And he's like, hey, Kurt, get Dad, put him on the phone. And you just heard, you heard the phone like hit the ground. And
out.
You heard him snoring like in the background. And it was pre-nothing you could do about it days. Like you could call
text,
back
yeah.
all you wanted. It was just busy. It was phone off the – you could hear him snoring in the background. Fucking dropped the phone and passed out. So the motherfucking guy was like – where is he? And it's like, I called, my brother picked up and I call him back. It's like, busy, busy, busy. The guy goes, fine, I'm calling the cops. And I'm like,
now you got
dick.
Both. You got your father.
Now I got the fucking cops. Who could be worse than the cops and my dad showing up simultaneously?
The guy fulfilled the assignment, though. He called his parents. The fact that his brother fucked it up isn't his fault.
I know, but I don't think he was going to let him go on a technicality.
The so, problem was Adam had called him a diminutive little prick.
I'll tell you what I did say to the guy. I do remember clearly saying to the little guy who was very angry, I said, look, well, first off, I'll never forget that it's called throwing – it's called a missile. The cops call in
yes.
cop parlance. It is whether it's a water
dangerous
balloon
missile.
Or a cinder block. It's a missile that has been hurled. So I remember as a 13-year-old getting a sort of chuckle of it's a water balloon. It's not a missile, but it was a missile. And the guy did say the one exchange I had with the guy was very angry, who was trying to tell my dad that he should beat me. Like he pulled my dad aside and said, "Like, listen, you really need to. I can't beat him myself legally,
well, yeah.
but you should beat him." But I was a smart ass back in the day. And I was 13 or 14. I was playing a lot of football, and I was lifting weights and stuff, and I was trying to, you know, bulk myself up. And I remember sort of thinking, and it was true. The guy said, if you were 18, I would kick your right. ass. And I said, if I was 18, I'd kick your ass. I was 210 pounds when I was 18. I was 6'2", and I was All-Valley in football, and I would have kicked his ass. I did the math. Like, I'm lifting weights. 5 years from now, I'll beat your ass, little man. And I explained that to him, but did not help with our entire – with the journey.
Didn't the grease
the
wheels?
No.
He had a choice in his life. He could have been a little guy and done something so it doesn't bother him.
Right.
Or be a little prick.
Yeah. And so I understood, you know, being pelted by water balloons in your Honda when you're driving home. And I'm sure he didn't have a bevy of models waiting for him back at his Bel Air estate.
Well, it depends on what kind of model.
Yeah. Well, it could have the Revell models. Yeah. The kind you put together with glue. But not actual models.
Human models.
Yeah.
Not human models. But I did that. I took whatever I had.
Yeah.
I couldn't play football because there are guys like you that played football.
Sure.
I couldn't play. I remember when I realized this isn't for me. Jack DeLuca, we were playing baseball. I wanted to play first base because I was a lefty.
Mm-hmm.
Gil Hodges was a lefty.
Yeah, you can't play shortstop if you're
and
lefty.
Jack DeLuca threw the ball to me, and I caught it, and I thought he broke my hand. And that's when I realized, oh.
Not for you.
This is not my sport.
But you can write for the Mermaids.
I could write for the Mermaids, and they became a gymnast.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, champion gymnast.
How now, where'd you grow up?
Originally Brooklyn till high school, and then I went to Long Island.
Gymnastics is one of these great equalizer sports that tosses out all the big dudes and
that's
the tall
right.
dudes because he just don't have the leverage to pull that stuff off.
You can't. Yeah, it's too big.
But
except the Russians.
Yeah, but even though no one over 6 foot,
no,
really.
No.
Vietnam.
Vietnam. I was drafted.
Yeah.
I'm one of those guys that when they would go, take that hill, I'd be going, let's talk first.
Yeah.
Before we take the hill.
But you were in countries, they say.
Yeah, I was. A year. 1967-68. I was there for Tet Offensive.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where were you during the Tet Offensive?
Place, go ready for this. I hate this. I pronounce it Bien Hoa.
Uh-huh.
It's pronounced Benoit.
Benoit,
which everybody
yeah,
goes,
sure.
Oh, like the balls.
Right,
no,
right,
not like the balls.
Right.
And it was... I was communications. I was actually a cryptographer. I would mm-hmm. you know, get, and I worked with the 173rd Airborne for the special flight. Didn't go out with them.
Right.
I was in like a little thing about one-fifth the size of this.
Was it one tour? And
one tour, 1 year.
And out, it seems like a long time.
You got to realize that's all you had to do. Live 1 year.
But
and you could go home.
But also 1 year when you're a young man.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a huge difference when you're 19, 20, 21. 1 year is fucking eternity.
It's 5% of your life.
Think about just when somebody suggests the notion of summer school when you're 18 and you go, whole summer? And you go, no, it's just 5 weeks, 6 weeks. You go, no way. I mean, now, you know.
Well, picture summer school, but no toilets.
That's what I'm picturing.
And
for
guns.
For a year.
Yeah.
All right.
But I did it. I did it. I'm proud of it.
Should we do a little, jump into a little news, Alison?
Really?
Rose,
yes.
Let me give a little love to one of our sponsors, and then we'll hop into
very
some
nice
news here.
Very nice people outside, by the way.
Oh, yeah. They'll fool you. Stamps.com, baby. Holidays are upon us, baby. And Stamps.com has you covered. Maybe you're mailing gifts. Use Stamps.com. Don't go down to the post office. You got to get in line. There's attitude. There's odor. There's everything going on at the post office. You don't need it. You're an important person. Time is valuable. Not like that Napoleon guy in the Honda Civic who was waiting for my pops to come down in his pajamas. Time is valuable to you, and I got a special offer, special promo offer. Use the promo code ADAM. You get the no-risk trial $110 bonus offer. Includes a digital scale, $55 free postage. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in ADAM. That's stamps.com, promo code ADAM. All right, let's do some news, man.
Cool.
The news with Alison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her iPad. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's Alison. Alison. And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with Zip It Cunt. It's Alison. Alison.
All right, so 11 current and former LAPD officers sued the LA City Council because they said they were forced to write tickets, like ticket quotas, and they said that they were forced to do something contrary to the law.
Hold
so
on.
So they brought a suit.
All right, tell me how much.
It was settled, $5.9 million, which is taxpayer money.
I can't.
Couple things. First off, if you're having difficulty emotionally with writing tickets, don't be a fucking cop. Number one. Number two. Listen, I hate the LAPD. I hate all this shit. Of course, there's quotas. And by the way, you going, no, we don't have quotas. We do have a certain amount of tickets we want written each month.
Well, the
but it's not a quota.
The department, there, what they say is that the officers were told to spend 80% of their time, quote, enforcing vehicle code violations that could lead to serious injury or death. They're saying it's not quota, it's that.
Yeah, injury what? Or death. Not having a fucking front license plate. You all know what it's like when you don't have a front license plate. You've seen cars burst into
incredible.
Flames.
Incredible.
Incredible death, yes.
It's interesting they decided to settle instead of fight it.
Well, I'm mad at everyone in this particular case because as a cop, your salary and not, you know, you're not a detective. You're just out there writing chicken shit tickets for a living. I'm guessing that dude is getting $73,000 a year, right?
Sure.
As in the chicken shit ticket writing, you're a foot soldier out there. All right. You're getting $62,000, $75,000 a year. There's 11 of these guys. That's about $500,000 each. Do we need to have 7 years' salary for this, whatever, 14 months or 5 years or 2 years or whatever the fuck you went through? Why the vast? And I know the people are like, well, emotionally, oh, fuck you. Being a cop, geez. You have a chance of being shot at on a daily fucking basis. So don't give me the emotionally, it was very strenuous on me. No, not when a Crip or Blood could shoot you at any particular given time on any day. You're a cop. Don't give me that emotional bullshit. Why should you be so handsomely? What I mean is all right, so you had a supervisor who was a little douchey. We've all had supervisors. Gary.
Yeah, we have, peeps.
I'm a little douchey, right?
I don't know what you're talking about, boss.
See?
Well done,
scared.
Gary.
Good answer. The point is this. We've all had superiors that were a little bit douchey. We've all had them sort of ask us to do shit that maybe we didn't think was in our job description or a little more work or a little, oh, come on, he's
Set
wrong.
Set up the cell booster.
Put up the sling box.
Yes. That's my point. You need hundreds of thousands of dollars to make you whole?
Do you not think there's something good about this, though, because it brings attention to the ticket quotas?
Listen, I love the idea that it's humiliating them. I love the idea that it's shining a light on these cockroaches. I've known they've been doing this and been yelling about it. They're not fucking heroes. They're fundraisers. There's a very small percentage of them are heroes. The
Who
rest
got
are
the money,
out
by
there.
The way?
Who?
Cops.
The cops got the $5 million?
They will be getting the money,
$6 million. That's our money. And we've done $31 million worth of. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry, $110 million in the last 5 years. $110 million, but 31 of those million have just been employees harassment, discrimination. Again, in a city where we're constantly broke and the schools don't work and then we can't rebuild the bridges and it's always just, oh, we don't have money for it. We don't have money for
it. And the tickets are $300, $400, $500.
Right. So it's an easy math.
There should be a class action lawsuit and we should be suing because of the
right,
quotas
that's
and we
right.
should get a portion back.
A fucking right.
Where's Aaron Brockovich?
Look, where are these areas, by the way? We have some hot spots in here. I can't.
My God, that's my house.
I can't tell by the map. But I've been saying this all along. These guys, it's a pretty simple equation. You have some jack off from high school, and you're paying him essentially $40 an hour to be a cop. Maybe it's $44 an hour. Maybe it's $51 an hour.
If he's risking his life,
who gives a shit? All right. You're paying him $50 an hour. He, in an hour, him on his Moto Guzzi over there, can hand out 7 tickets in an hour.
Oh,
and each ticket is worth $280, $300, $320. You got an earner.
Absolutely.
The fucking mafia would love this kind of math. We got a bunch of guys who were paying $50 an hour to that are putting on the books $3,000 an hour. Good. Now, how many of these guys can we sign up to patrol the city? Because if we got 10 of these guys,
it's a lot of money.
We're doing all right. But if we have 1,000 of these guys, That's fucking, that looks pretty good for the coffers there. The coppers look good for the coffers. Now, wow. Here's the only problem. There's a fundamental problem in that process of thinking. We are the public who are right. paying your fucking asses to protect us from danger, not to raise money by shaking us down. If I see another fucking mom pulled over in an Aerostar van on her way to work for nothing, I'll fucking vomit all over the fucking courthouse.
I got a ticket. I was at a stoplight, stopped, and I had my phone in my hand trying to figure out which direction to go. And
right.
I got ticketed.
And I love the, you were rolling. It was a four-way stop, but you didn't come to tow. Yeah, I know. Really? There's nobody around. Really, Serpico? Jesus fucking Christ. And by the way, now, as I've said many times.
You really say that to him?
No.
Oh, good.
Here's the deal. I have a radar detector. Okay. Number one, everyone go get a radar detector. Oh. Go to Amazon.com, click through the Adam Carolla link. Go get a radar detector. Put it in your car.
I thought you were talking metaphorically, like you have a radar detector for bullshit.
No, I know where the cops are. I know how it works. I drive through red lights. I drive through left turn arrows. I drive through right turn arrows. I drive through everything because I know the chicken shit cops aren't there. I know where the cops are. They're waiting for you. You're coming to them. They're not staking out every intersection. That's why I've never gotten a ticket. I understand their feeble minds. But get a radar detector. Take your front license plate off. Keep your dealer plate, your cardboard dealer plate. It's us against them. It's war. You understand? They've declared war on the citizens, so fuck them.
Well, you can also... follow the rules.
How dare you?
How
do you know what show
you?
You're on?
I know. I'm such a pussy.
But they set the rules in a way that it makes it very inconvenient to
and
really
nearly
follow
impossible.
Them exactly.
Nearly
yeah.
impossible.
West LA, Hollywood, Wilshire, all the fucking usual areas. And again, my greatest forget about the birth of my twins or my marriage or any of that. My greatest moment as a human being was going down Wilshire in my Audi, which I happily returned with the same cardboard McKenna BMW Audi plate on it that I leased it with 4 years earlier. I was driving right down Wilshire Boulevard in Santa Monica, saw the cop bike coming at me, and I saw him looking at me, and I saw him look at my bumper. He saw no front license plate. He whipped a Yui. Again, I thought U-turns were illegal because they're dangerous.
No, only when we do them.
There's different rules.
Much safer if you're on a motorcycle?
That's right.
Okay. Whipped a Yui, came around, saw the cardboard, and peeled off. New, thought it was a new car.
Excellent.
Yeah, fuck you, Santa Monica PD. Suck it. I'd had that car for 3 years. The license plates were in the trunk,
why
assholes.
Don't they ticket dealer plate cars? Because it's too difficult, or they think it's a test drive?
They think I got the thing a week ago, and I'm waiting for the plates to show up in the mail.
But they could still give you a ticket.
No, they can't because you buy a car, you have a grace period for the physical license plate to show up from the DMV.
Yes,
like
if they
in the
pull
mail.
You
should all be driving like insane people during that week.
If they pull
you
over
they can
and
give
say,
you a ticket for doing something stupid. You just not the no front license plate part.
See.
And in general, they don't. It's a little like it's a little more paperwork for them or something, and they kind of they shy away.
It does feel like I don't see a lot of maybe it's just because there's not a lot of new cars on the road. But I don't see a lot of dealer plate cars being pulled over. Maybe it's like you said, the unspoken. This guy's getting used to the car. This guy's just figuring it out. Or
there just is. There must be a step for them that they don't. You have to understand. Oh man, get ready for some heavy fucking truth coming. Heavy. Heavy truth. What do cops always say about criminals? Whatever's easiest. Meaning they're going to walk down the street. If they see a house with bars on the windows, they're not going in. They see the house with the porch light on, they're not going in. But they see one with the window open and just a screen door, whatever.
Looks good.
Easy pickings. Cops, same way. Easy pickings.
Broken taillight.
If they see something that looks like just a little bit more paperwork for them, well, they can hand you a fucking ticket for anything. There's another stooge, another patsy coming down the road. 10 seconds later, they'll hand him a ticket and they'll save themselves a little paperwork. So everyone, just go to your local car dealer, get the cardboard cutout. You can have a used car. Put it on, take your plates off.
Sounds like you're saying the line between
cops
and criminals.
Can you just take the front plate off?
Yeah, take the front plate off. You won't get the thing for the intersection camera. And then put the cardboard plate on the back. Otherwise, you'll get busted for no front plate. That's my point. I thought this completely through. I returned my leased car 4 years later with the same cardboard plate. Occasionally when they fade, you have to get a new one. I've had people that got pulled over because it looked a little faded, looked like it was on too long.
So we paid that money and it's gone.
We paid that money. We paid the women who were on a paper route. We shot them up thinking they were the large black man.
But that at least
they unloaded it.
That's
different.
This is we paid the tickets, and now we are paying the people who gave us the tickets because they're upset that they had to give us tickets. Go fuck yourselves.
I completely agree. This money should be coming back to us. And again, this whole part where you get to claim you're emotionally whatever. I need to be compensated because what, Mr. Cop? You're going to be scared to write your next ticket? You brought it home with you. I mean, we all have stress. We all have parts of our job that we dislike.
It's
who
like
do we
if
sue?
If you work in a jail and you're ordered to beat the inmates, mm-hmm. can you then sue over the distress, even though you're now probably criminally liable?
I think beating another human being is
the same as giving a ticket.
I'd say less.
I don't know.
Less an offense. I
take the ticket.
I'm
personally.
Saying you guys signed up for a job where you hand out tickets for a living. Somebody asked you to hand out more tickets more often, and for that you think you deserve $500,000?
Yeah.
I would say just about any lawsuit should be fuck the amount. I want to know how much you make. I'll pay you for a year. I'll pay a year's salary.
I don't write anything.
I think that's pretty fucking good for any job. Where you go, whether you're a janitor or CEO, whatever it is, whatever happened to you? You got all your limbs. I see no scar tissue on you. Are you okay? Good.
I was very frightened.
But you're out of harm's way now?
Physically, but emotionally,
good.
I'm in
the midst
of danger.
I'll give you what it takes for you to make in your miserable job for 1 year. I will give you that in cash. Now, please go away. Thank you.
Still frightened.
Good. Take your money and get the fuck out of here. Why do we have to settle for $6 million?
Because it'll cost more money. They suddenly got $20 million lawsuit.
I know.
They pay all these lawyers, and next thing you know, they give them $8 million.
Listen, you're preaching to the choir. I'm just saying, how is it we always have an unlimited amount of money to settle this stuff up? Whenever somebody says, hey, why don't we hire a few more cops and a few more firemen? So, hey, how about we hire a few more school teachers?
Look out.
Not in the budget. We have 40 kids per classroom. Yeah, we should have 20 kids per class. Yeah, but we don't have the funds. $6 million. You can hire a few teachers for a few semesters, can't you?
My daughter's a first grade teacher. Believe me, she can use the money.
And the $110 million that's been settled out over the last 5 years? Seems like you keep a couple of your daughter and her friends busy for a couple semesters?
A little bit. I had to adopt her classroom.
Oh, you did?
You bet. You bet. I adopted the classroom.
And then
sure
molested
that they had
it
all,
for many years.
They had all the thing, make sure they have the iPods and the this and the that.
It's so fucking sad, isn't it? Bette Midler's got to step in and clean up the highway.
That's exactly what I say. Fuck the highway. Jesus, there's kids in there, for God's sake.
So how does it work to adopt the classroom?
Well, you find a good teacher and you make sure that class has, for example, the teacher, you get a little microphone. They have speakers in the front.
Really?
Speakers in the back.
How big is
like at the
classroom?
Auto show.
Absolutely. That like the point and drape girls.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And you make sure that the kids can hear 40%. Grades go up 40% when a teacher has one of those things. They don't have to yell.
Really?
Absolutely. And you get iPods and you get
I've seen enough romantic comedies that when they have to say something that's difficult, they get the feedback sound.
Yeah, something, or if they're not used to talking to
the microphone knows when you have to deliver difficult news and awkward news, it gives feedback. If you're nervous, you get the boop. That's if you're nervous.
Right.
If you're confident, there's no problem.
Yeah, in a courtroom, even if it's been working fine for every single person.
When the nervous person hops up there.
I can't believe it.
How much does it cost to adopt a classroom?
About $5,000, $10,000.
Well, that's well. There's a variation there, but $5,000-$10,000.
Yeah, and you get good stuff. You get it for that classroom.
Is it hard to get the young white?
Otherwise, you're going to give it to. Otherwise, my daughter's in a Title I school, by the way.
Yeah,
here's
my deal.
Disadvantaged.
I will adopt said classroom.
There you go.
Once a week, I need the kids to swing by the house.
A little lawn work.
Put a little coat of wax on the Jag.
A little something.
Hey,
something.
You want to learn something about the real world?
I was brought up like you.
Come on over and pick up a rake.
I was brought up like you.
That's right.
You want some money? You better do something for it. I don't care if you're seven.
Put these kids to work.
Why is he operating a sweatshop? That's what I would say if I drove
by. I'm making some tennis shoes. I ain't selling them. I'm just making them.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
I like my own made shoes. I like handmade. And I like the feel of a shoe that's been stitched by a seven-year-old. It feels different.
Well, the thing you don't like is a shoe you have to wear 2 days in a row. Or ever again after the first time.
They make shoes that you wear 2 days in a row?
I'll tell you about it after the show. People wear...
What's next? A maxi pad you throw in the washing machine? Get the hell out of here. Shoes 2 days in a row. That's as insane as not going to Sherry's Berries. That's right. The holidays are upon us. How about some giant dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries? Only $19.99. 40% savings. Go to berries.com. Click on the microphone. Type in Ace. You got to have these
excellent gift.
Oh, fresh, big, juicy berries. Delectable. Dipped in white chocolate, milk chocolate, dark chocolate. And I got a little deal for my listeners only. Double the berries. Just $10. Just $10. That's all. And they also have other delectable products, like cheesecakes and dipped pretzels. I don't know why. I think it's the salt on the pretzel.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife, Christy, made some great cookies the other day, and it's because they had pieces of
sea salt sprinkled on top.
Pow, man. Yeah. Same with the pretzels, man. Sherry's Berries. They got the $19.99 offer on. You just give them a call. 866-FRUIT-02, 866-FRUIT-02, or you can visit them online, berries.com, berries.com. Click on the microphone, top right corner, type in Ace. Don't wait. Let's do it now. All right, baby girl, let's do one more.
A six-year-old boy in Colorado Springs was suspended from school for kissing a girl on the hand, and the school accused him of sexual harassment.
Ooh. Yeah. I
can't bear it.
We can't.
I can't bear it anymore.
We cannot.
The stupidity?
Well, what we can't do with this country is we can't get it the fuck back in the barn.
We've
let the inmates take over. We've done this. We've all bought into this, you know, thing where it's like, look, if Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has to go through the metal detector, then Sandy Duncan's grandmother's got to go through the metal. Well, it's only fair. No, it's not.
It's not.
It flies in the face of what we're trying to do. Well, look, if sexual harassment is wrong at the workplace, well, then it's wrong on the schoolyard. Well, then everything is sexual harassment. Well, look, we don't want guns in schools, right? Well, that kid used his hand and made it into the shape of a gun.
Cut that kid's hand off.
What are we doing here, people?
Did you hear about the monkey gun?
I did hear about the monkey gun.
Well.
It's also the name of my unit.
Oh,
call it monkey gun.
Sorry to get so personal.
Yeah, what we're doing, and what we shouldn't do because we're human beings, is we should not attempt to beat ourselves on a technicality all the time when we're fucking ourselves on these technicalities. I don't get it.
We have too much.
The mother is trying to get this taken off of the boy's record because she doesn't want sexual harassment on his record, and she's having trouble getting off. And
she's six?
He's six. And she's saying that it's raising all his questions because now he's asking her what is sex.
That's right. He has to ask the mother.
Again, look. First thing we need to do, we need to stop the lawyers because everyone's scared of a lawsuit. And the thing is they go, I can't tell you how many people are in a position of power or at least a notch up on somebody. And they go, I know it's nothing. I know it was just kidding. I know it was zero. But you do understand I still have to file a report. Okay, stop it there.
You don't have to.
You don't have to do shit.
Right.
I've said it a million times. I used to teach traffic school. I had to, by law, have everyone in class for like 400 minutes of instruction. People would show up an hour late, and I would say, sit down. I would not keep them after. I would not send them home. I would not keep them during lunch. I would just tell them, sit down.
God
what
bless
do I care?
You for showing up.
Who gives a shit? Why can't – I'm worried that we're giving way too many people way too much power, and they just go, hey, by law, the toy monkey gun can't get on the plane. Or by law, the guy who kisses his girlfriend on the cheek on the schoolyard, whatever we ended all did back in the day, he has to be slapped with sexual assault charges. I mean – we're just
really,
insane.
It was like sexual assault charges against a 6-year-old?
It is sexual harassment or whatever.
The school, I don't think there's like a criminal charge, but the school there suspended was a harassment. Him saying it was sexual harassment.
All right, except for, first off, she was willing. She
I was
liked,
gonna say.
She liked the boy.
Well, she was asking for it.
I pulled the same move when I was 6 years old. When I was 6 in first grade, I kissed a girl in the hot lunch line.
Really?
Yeah,
it wasn't hot until
it wasn't,
then.
That's right. It was a cold lunch until
then. What was her reaction?
What grade?
She wasn't pleased. Kicked me in the shins later.
What grade was
first grade. I was 6 years old.
Wow. Yeah.
She's in a bathtub right now, just crying, rubbing herself raw with a loofah.
That's right.
Clean. Uh-huh. Camera panning over her.
Get the bald man away.
I wanted to. Away. I just never had the balls
I
to
never
do
had
it.
The balls to either. But evidently he did, and she... is his girlfriend.
That's what the mom says, that she was fine. Well, this is his mom, but that she was fine with it because he and the girl consider themselves boyfriend and girlfriend.
Well, did you see what she was wearing?
Right.
For it. Anyway, the part about the guns, again, that's us being stupid, but at least we don't want guns to be on campus at some point.
So that story is that someone was flying from St. Louis to Seattle and had a sock monkey. She makes quirky dolls. She had a sock monkey with her, and
the monkey had
a tiny gun. And so the TSA agent confiscated the gun.
Killed the monkey.
Said, and the woman said, this is not a gun. It's a prop for my monkey. And then the woman said, if I held it up to your neck, you wouldn't know if it was real or not. And then the woman said to the agent, you're kidding me, right? And
it's like
then
that big.
The gun is an inch and 3/8 across and something that a G.I. Joe would sport. The monkey itself looks like the size of like a G.I. Joe. And I'm looking at a picture. They put a quarter there for scale.
Yes.
So unless those quarters are the size of hubcaps, which they should do just to fuck with people in the scale department, have dimes
the
size of manhole covers.
These are replicas.
Look how big this flea is. Oh, no, wait. It'd be the other way around.
The other way around, but still, I know what you mean.
Yeah. I'll work it out. Anyway, right. So now we're crossing over into stupid.
We've left.
Oh, we're firmly in stupid.
No, we're in it. We're in it. And how do we get back from stupid? Because we are going to have to.
I think the pendulum will swing.
I agree. The more these stories you hear, the more. But again, the self-imposed part. These are our rules, our laws, our people. These are the people, you know, TSA, they're not from planet TSA and have come down here to lord over our and govern our citizens. We pay them. Whatever your ticket is, a certain percentage of that price of the ticket goes to pay the hack that's telling you to leave the monkey behind. And it's the same with the cops. We pay them. And it's the same with the principal and the school teachers. We pay them. We are paying. Listen, in the book, there's a part where I say we have built a minimum wage gilded cage.
Absolutely.
Where we took a bunch of really fucking stupid people. We paid them $9 an hour. We gave them a windbreaker, and we said, go free and make us miserable.
Absolutely.
We are paying them to make us miserable. It's time we stop. Thank you.
And we will, right. I think, at some point. When we run out of money, suddenly there'll be no money, and then we got to cut something.
It'll be nice. All right, let's bring it home.
That's the news. I'm Allison Rosen. Zip it, cunts.
Well done, Allison.
That was the news with Allison Rosen.
Ah, Encore, baby. Today's show sponsored by Encore Life Insurance. You got loved ones. They depend on you. Let's just say a miniature monkey breaks into your house and takes you out with a plastic gun. It could happen.
You want to have some life insurance in that case.
You want to know how my grandfather went?
Hmm.
Stuffed monkey.
Jesus Christ.
Plastic gun.
Horrible.
How'd you get through that last story?
First off, I'm a pro, but it is starting to hit me now.
I was going to say, take some time, man. It's a podcast.
Breathe, Adam. Breathe. I have to remind myself to breathe.
Verbally.
I would argue with people who say, I have to remind myself to breathe. Yeah. Let's say you do it in your sleep. You do it when you're passed out drunk.
Am I allowed to get another?
You want another Mangria?
Yeah.
Get it right after a show here.
That's great.
Oh, I love that. I love that you love it. 866-347-5748. Or you can visit their website, by the way, smartterm.com. Breathe, Adam. They compare the premiums of highly rated insurers, and they help you save. Look, you have loved ones. You have to look after them. If you have insurance, you may need a little bit more. Encore can help. Give them a call, 866-347-5748. All right. I want to thank David Landsberg for coming in here.
Are you kidding me? What a call.
I love your attitude, buddy.
I got no choice.
You don't. I think you do.
Nah.
No, you don't.
No.
You got to enjoy it.
I got too many medications.
I love that. I love that he's lapping up the Mangria and enjoying himself. Sex Tax is the name of the movie. It's available now exclusively on iTunes and also soon to be available on Amazon. You guys know what to do with the Amazon. All right.
By the way, I got in a lawsuit on that, too.
Oh, for Sex Tax?
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk after the show.
I got it. It's horrible. You got to cut someone's head off.
Okay. All right. I would happily talk to you about it, but we're bringing it home.
Okay.
All right, but we'll cut the guy's head off.
I like that.
We'll do it ourselves. website, LandsbergStudios.com is where you go. Sex Tax Movie is the Twitter. I want to thank
Kevin Costner.
He
was
here?
Here
we go. Yeah, that is this Sunday coming up in Simi Valley, Air Force One Pavilion at Reagan Library. Me and Kevin Costner. All right. So, until next time, Adam Carolla for David Landsberg, Allison Rosen, Kevin Costner, and Bald Brian saying mahalo.
Sure. Oh, like the balls.
For call-in times and phone topics, follow the show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Two live podcasts coming up at the American Comedy Club in San Diego. Wednesday, December 18th. The first one sold out. Tickets going fast for the second show, so get yours now at adamcarolla.com.